Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, whatever.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's SmackDown Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SPTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing this week's SmackDown Live at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to talk to us live, of course, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Before we get started with this week's SmackDown, a couple of news items worthy to start with. First off, of course, is Dolph Ziggler signing a brand new contract, which reportedly gives him about $1.5 million a year for the next 2 years. There had been reports that Ziggler was very close to walking out. Other people have said that's not true. Ziggler had always planned on re-signing. Either way, he's re-signed now, locked in a two-year deal. It's quite a considerable amount of money for Dolph Ziggler, and we'll see how he's used in the future. Second piece of news is the signing of Mahabali Shira from Impact to a developmental deal with the WWE. I'm not sure really where that's going to go, whether Shira would be fast-tracked to be a part of Jinder Mahal's team or someone to go against him perhaps, or if he's just going to end up in NXT. Not really sure. We'll wait and see on him. And the third piece of news, and probably the biggest, is that after Backlash, which of course is the pay-per-view after WrestleMania, apparently all WWE pay-per-views will now be joint branded. Now, there are some people celebrating this, saying, well, this is great, because A, we'll get less pay-per-views, which is true, you will. You'll get 12 instead of 19 or how many ever they had. You'll only get 12 pay-per-views, you'll get one a month. Here's the bad news. They're going to now be 4 hours plus. And more bad news, some of the people who were able to make some money by getting on these pay-per-views, who would not have made the pay-per-views otherwise, they're not going to get on the pay-per-views. Simple as that. So let's take, for example, someone like, oh, I don't know, Nakamura. He's not going to get on every pay-per-view unless he's the champion. Baron Corbin, unless he's a champion, he's not going to make every pay-per-view. There's a lot of people who won't make every pay-per-view, and these guys, that's going to cost them money. It's money right out of their pockets. And it's also less exposure for the fans, because unfortunately now these people will be relegated to television matches. So you will never get to see, oh, can this guy really do a 15-minute really good match on a pay-per-view, because it's going to be back to the 5-minute Monday Night Raw or SmackDown matches for them. It's also bad news for the women, because if you think for 1 minute that every pay-per-view is going to have 5 women's matches or 4 women's matches, forget it. It's not going to happen. Now, every one of these pay-per-views won't have a title defense by every champion, I guess. It couldn't, or that would be it. That's all you'd have. But nonetheless, I think it's going to rob the fans. Number one, people were complaining, oh, there were too many pay-per-views and they were only 3 hours or 2.5 hours. That's all the pay-per-view needs to be, folks. When these pay-per-views start running 4.5 hours, you really start to lose your focus and you just say, oh, how much more can I watch? And the fans live lose their energy. And then it makes the whole pay-per-view sound like, well, the fans weren't really into it. And it's not true. They're tired. Imagine yourself at a pay-per-view. There's an hour pre-show. You're getting in the arena about that time. So you're spending 5 hours, five, in a seat, in a crowded arena, and you're supposed to be cheering those whole 5 hours long? That's not a lot to ask. It really is. I'm totally against this move. And I guess I'm the exact opposite of most people in the wrestling community, because everyone seems to think this is great, and I can't understand why. I just think it's going to lead to longer pay-per-views, less exposure for the undercard guys who are getting some exposure. Put it this way. How come everybody raves about NXT's quote-unquote pay-per-views and they're 2 hours long? Nobody says, that was only 2 hours. I feel ripped off. What are you talking about? You all rave about the NXT pay-per-views. So why can't we have that? I would rather have 15, 17 pay-per-views, 2 hours and a half long, than I would have 12, 4 hours long, that don't include a large amount of the undercard of these guys that have worked so hard to try to get on a pay-per-view and make a little pay-per-view money. So let's start right there with the panel. Mike, I just don't think it's a good move.
I don't think it's a good move either. And that's a fact. Now, like you said, 2 hours is good enough. Maybe 2.5 hours if you stretch it. You know, if you stretch it to 2.5 hours, all right, fine. You know, including possibly two pre-show matches, whatever, to whatever pay-per-view you want to say. You know, 2.5, 2 and 3/4 hours. I don't know. You know, something like that, you know. 4 hours, yeah, you lose. The fans lose this, and it shows. I mean, you can tell. You're watching the pay-per-view. I tend to like to watch the replay of the pay-per-view, but you can tell. You can tell. They start out, the fans start out hot, and then they're definitely 15, 20, 25-minute lulls in the pay-per-views, you know.
Yeah, because they're exhausted. Todd, which would you rather have, 12 long pay-per-views or maybe 16 shorter ones featuring different people?
I got to agree with you on this one, too. And like you said, with the four-hour pay-per-views, like with the big ones like SummerSlam, whatever, I don't mind that.
Right.
4 hours with the smaller pay-per-views, no. I would keep like 2 or 3 hours tops on the small.
Yeah, I'm good with WrestleMania and stuff being 4 hours. It's special. I get it. But come on. Come on. And again, I think it's going to affect the women's division. I think it's going to affect the undercard, the tag team division. There's matches that we wouldn't have seen had the brands been together on every pay-per-view. I could name you, and I'm going to go back and watch some, and I'm going to name you some matches we probably never would have seen had this rule been implied last year. So I totally disagree with the move. I think it's a dumb move. We'll see what ends up happening. Anyway, let's get on to SmackDown, because I know there's strong emotions about this SmackDown. One of our regular listeners wrote to me and said this is the most horrible show I've ever seen. You know, I can understand. If you tell me, look, we're having a SmackDown, no AJ Styles, no Shinsuke Nakamura, no Rusev or any of the Rusev Day stuff. The Usos aren't going to fight. I'm saying to you, well, I don't know. What the hell are you going to do? Randy Orton's not going to fight. Bobby Roode's not going to fight. If you pitch that to me, I would say, well, I don't know. What the hell kind of a show are you going to have? And to be honest with you, it was weak in that respect. So there's two sides to this coin. So let me get to both of them before we go through individual matches. The first side of the coin is you didn't get to see any of the major stars actually compete. You got to see a few of them do promos and a few of them get in the ring. But as far as compete, no. The other side of that coin was for a show that featured mostly the, I mean, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn aren't undercard by any means, but mostly the undercard. It wasn't a bad show. the matches were actually, the ones we had were actually okay. It's just that you kind of disappointed the fans by saying there's no major action here. There was nothing really going with the Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan thing. A little bit of backstage banter, nothing much. And yes, were there things that made no sense? Absolutely. Like, for the life of me, I do not know how Dolph Ziggler or the problem was the show was based on a premise that makes no sense. The premise of this entire show was Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler are going to fight and one of these guys is going to get added to the title match. That's the premise of SmackDown. The premise makes no sense because neither one of these guys did one damn thing to deserve to be considered to be added to a title match. Dolph Ziggler threw his title down and left. I would hardly call that a guy that you want to give another opportunity to hold another title. Baron Corbin's done nothing but lose. So how these two guys, how it was decided that these two men have earned the opportunity to possibly get put into the title match at Fastlane is beyond me. So technically speaking, the show from the beginning made no sense. So let's get that out of the way first. Now, having said that it made no sense, it makes perfect sense that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn would try to eliminate them because that just lowers their chances of winning this match. However, again, the nonsensical thing is, if you are going to accept Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn as heels and true heels, what does that make Corbin and Dolph Ziggler at this point? Faces? And they are faces why? What did they do? So again, that's a head scratcher. There was no actual logic in this show at all. None, zero, not a drop, not an iota of logic was in this show. And yet, the actual matches that they had were very entertaining. So let me get to the first match, and then we'll talk about this nonsense. I'm going to tell you right now, let me make a bold prediction. Sarah Logan will be a standout. You know, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't often enjoy watching the women wrestle, and I'll tell you why I don't. It's not very physical, as a rule. It seems very patternized and tame. A lot of the times, it seems like a dance that we choreographed very well, but it doesn't feel like a fight. It almost never feels like a fight. Sarah Logan throws that out the window. I mean, I'm watching it with Charlotte Flair, and I'm saying, holy crap, man. She doesn't wrestle like these other girls. It's not exactly ballet when she's in there. She's just smash mouth hitting you in the face. You know, she's just kicking your ass. And as I'm watching it, I'm actually smiling, saying, this is what I want to see from some of the women. I want to see the difference in styles. Nobody has a difference in style in the women's division, except maybe, you know, Nia Jax a little bit, and maybe Asuka a little. But aside from that, everybody kind of wrestles that same style. And now I'm looking at Sarah Logan saying, man, she's just coming in there and like whooping your ass, you know, and she has that female Stone Cold Steve Austin thing where it's just like, OK, I'm just coming in here and I'm starting to swing. And if I get you in the corner, I'm stomping a mud hole in your ass, walking it dry. I like Sarah Logan. I think this girl could be one of the standout stars in the women's revolution if she's allowed to be. And having said that, I know she's not beating Charlotte, and she shouldn't have beaten Charlotte. But that match did more to help Sarah Logan in losing than it would have some other girls if they won. I was really, really impressed, Mike, with Sarah Logan. I had no idea that was her style. I always saw her in tag team matches for a minute, and I didn't get a sense of how she would be as a solo, and I'm really impressed.
I'm really impressed as well, and that's the thing. I mean, I've always talked about, kind of a female Arn Anderson type. Well, that's Sarah Logan, you know. That's Sarah Logan. She'll come in and do whatever she does, do whatever she's got to do, and if she wins and loses the match, it's always going to be entertaining because that's her style, and it's a different style. And it's that, like you said, that Stone Cold Steve Austin / Arn Anderson style, you know. And that's the thing. Now, one other thing you mentioned earlier, Rusev. You know, if you pay any attention to the mixed tag team, Rusev and Lana, they put Rusev and Lana together. When both of them came out, they got a pop. And not only that, she got the pin. She won the match.
Yeah, I know. But here's the thing. I don't like this mixed match challenge. I don't like it at all. It's like a bonus mode in a video game. It's illogical. I don't even know why they bothered other than to just try to draw some attention to this Facebook Live thing. The bottom line is this. If it's taking stars away from SmackDown, and I know the live audience gets to see it, but I'm talking about the show. If it's taking these stars off the show, I just don't think it's a good move. I just don't. And, you know, no AJ Styles, no Nakamura, no Rusev. That's a lot of people that the fans of the show tune in to see. And it's not good enough to just say, well, they're on the Mixed Match Challenge, which you can watch on Facebook. Well, maybe they don't want to. They tuned into SmackDown to see him. They're SmackDown stars, correct? So I don't know. I'm not buying that. I just don't like it. Anyway, what happens, obviously, is that Kevin Owens attacks Baron Corbin, and they attack Dolph Ziggler. And by the way, they did a really good job. I will credit especially the Haluva kick at ringside. Looked like it took Dolph Ziggler's head completely off his shoulders. It's amazing what a $1.5 million contract will do to your incentive, huh? But anyway, I'm buying that. I'm totally into that. I'm like, okay, well, I don't know why they're faces, really, and I don't even know if that's what their intention is. But certainly they'd be the ones you'd have the most sympathy for. They were the ones that were attacked unfairly. Even though you could point out that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have a perfect right to say, why would these guys be at it at all? Any of them. So it's weird. But the first match is Kevin Owens, Baron Corbin. And Corbin was wrestling more like a face, which is weird. And I don't know, maybe they just figure he has no ability to be a heel. Nobody cares. Maybe they're going to go that route. I don't know. Maybe it's just a one-shot deal. But what I do know is he seemed a little better than he normally has been. He's in there with Kevin Owens, who certainly can help. And I thought it was a decent match. I was actually entertained by the match. And it's been a very long time. Way back in that one match he had with Kalisto was entertaining. Up till that, I don't remember a Baron Corbin match I was overly entertained by. But I did like this one. And what shocked me was, I figured, well, I wasn't understanding the stipulation. I thought if either one of Baron Corbin and Sami Zayn won, then both were added. Not they had to individually earn their way. So when Baron Corbin won, I thought, wow, then that kind of, there goes the Sami Zayn Dolph Ziggler match. It doesn't matter. But then I figured it out that no, that's not what Shane meant. So we knew Corbin was added. Well, when you knew Corbin was added, then you basically knew Ziggler was added. They weren't going to do that to Ziggler. And I do think this muddies up the match. I'm not sure I like it better this way. But, Todd, I do think that was a good match.
You're absolutely right there. That was a good match with Ziggler, with Corbin and Owens there. It had, like, a lot of false finishes in that, too. And during those two guys, between those two guys.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that Corbin did a better job than usual, Mike.
I think he did too, and that's the thing. I'll say this to you. I don't know if I've said it before, but I think I mean, I think Corbin would do well maybe if they find a way to put him in a group, you know. Maybe call it something, like the Wolf Pack or something like that. I don't know, something.
Well, they've had a Wolf Pack already, but I don't know. Look, Corbin needs a mouthpiece. That's definitely what he needs. Or he needs something because he can't do it on his own. Ziggler, of course, can. Ziggler's good at what he does. We'll see what ends up happening. We then get the Bobby Roode thing, which, you know, less and less people are doing this glorious thing now. You know, I told you it was going to get old. Told you people were going to be like, okay, been there, done that. We're 2 months into it, and it's not thrilling us anymore. Now they're going to want to see the man behind this, and they're going to want to see some personality, and they're going to want to see some exciting wrestling. Well, Roode comes out and says, hey, John Cena, like him or not like him, made the U.S. belt mean something because he had this U.S. Open challenge. And I am going to try to continue that so that this U.S. belt means something. And normally that means everybody backstage has a shot. But I'm hoping that it's one particular person and Randy Orton's music hits. Now, maybe it's just me. And it's quite possibly just me. But I have not been excited about Bobby Roode fighting anybody. And for some weird reason, when Randy Orton got in the ring, I said, I actually want to see this. I actually think this could be good. And let's see how they handle it. Well, before they can do anything, Jinder Mahal music hits. And Jinder Mahal finally cuts a really, really good promo. And says, look, I'm with you on this open challenge, but the bottom line is you should be mortally ashamed of yourself that your peers only voted you 9 and you've been in here 16 years and this guy walks through the door and he's number 5. And Randy Orton did a good job of saying, I'm not bothered by that, but you can see he was. And I thought the tension between the three were actually really good. And I think the key line to the entire skit, if you want to call it that, was when Bobby Roode said, I have nothing but respect for Randy Orton and everything he's accomplished. But if you really want to know why you were voted number 9, maybe it's because everybody's sick of getting RKO'd out of nowhere for no reason. That's perfectly logical. And I loved it. I said, well, that's about time. Because that's the thing. The Randy Orton thing's almost become like a comedy where it's like, oh, and then Randy Orton does it just to be funny. Out of nowhere, for no reason, he doesn't hate the guys. He doesn't care. It's just RKO. And we're all supposed to say, oh, that Randy Orton. You know what he did? He RKO'd me after the match, that silly guy. I mean, we're friends, but he still did it. Now, wrestlers are going to be like, who the fuck do you think you are? And it's about time that they finally had one guy saying, look, I'm not putting up with that. You have no reason to come down and interfere in my match and RKO me out of nowhere, and people are getting damn sick of it. Good. Bobby Roode finally had a really good promo. And I'm actually interested in seeing this match, which I never thought I would. So I'm happy about that one as well. Mike, what's your thoughts?
I'm happy about it as well also. And the fact of the matter is we know what he – basically, Orton is a one-trick pony right now. It's the RKO out of nowhere thing. That's what he is. And you can't argue with that. Whereas we can get something good out of Jinder and Bobby Roode, you know. Yeah, Jinder's got the Colossus and Bobby Roode's got that DDT thing and whatever that he does. But we can get something good out of those two guys. And we know what Orton wants to do. He wants to, I won't say fade into the sunset, but it's just, you look at him and you can tell that he's no longer in the type of shape of where you're used to seeing him in. he's getting lazier and lazier as time goes by, you know, in that respect.
Well, the one good thing I think this accomplished, too, is it helped Jinder Mahal, who left both guys lying. And I said, I sort of feel like that helped build Mahal a little bit. So that particular segment, Todd, I give a high grade to. Even though they ripped us off of a match, it did go a long way to furthering some storylines.
You're absolutely right about there about Bobby Roode cutting a great promo about the Randy Orton giving RKO from behind and for like a sneak attack thing. It was a good promo there as well.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I thought it was okay. Again, I'm waiting for the big match or something to come up. I figure, well, okay, so far so good. I figure we're going to see AJ Styles. We're going to see Nakamura. Rusev must be around. You know, I'm still thinking we're going to see that at this point. So at this point, I'm saying, you know, so far so good. We get the Usos promo, which the Bludgeon Brothers break the monitor on with the hammers. That's good. That feud's shaping up. They're handling this the right way with that feud. They're keeping them kind of apart, but close enough together. So you're getting your anticipation of when they fight, which is their job. And that's a good job. Then the New Day come out and they're going to do a pancake eating challenge. I guess that's what this was all about. And it's interrupted by Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable, who I think they did a pretty good job finally of saying, look, this is just stupid. If it's not one thing with you guys, it's the other. You're just a comedy act now. It's pancake eating. Well, we're not here to be pancake eaters. We're not here to be whatever. We're here to be pro wrestlers. And that led to a pretty solid match. I don't know what they're doing with Benjamin and Gable, because 1 minute they're winning, 1 minute they're losing. They're like the most 50-50 team in the world, so I don't see them exactly doing much. But it was an entertaining enough match, and those guys can certainly, both of those guys, Benjamin and Gable, can certainly handle themselves in the ring. So most of the time it's going to be a somewhat entertaining match, and the New Day is really... You can say what you want about the New Day. A lot of people say comedy act or whatever, but to be honest, when you really press them and say, look, we're going to need a good match out of you, they can definitely pull off a very good match. So again, not too disappointed with that match. Mike, what do you think?
Not too disappointed with that match, you know. And look, they are who they are. And individually, the New Day will give you good matches as well, so... I'm not too worried about getting a good match out of the New Day, any of them, you know. I mean, we've seen them in the tournaments and this, that, and the other where you know they're going to lose, but it's still, you know, you knew that, for instance, Xavier Woods was going to lose, but he still gave you a great match, you know. So... I'm not worried about the New Day.
No, New Day is very capable in the ring, and apparently they're very capable of reinventing themselves and their characters. Decent match, Todd.
You're absolutely right there. That was a pretty good match with the New Day and Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin there. And like you said, it was one of the matches I liked this past week, sort of. And then that's,
yeah, I liked the match. I mean, again, to be honest with you, I thought the New Day might lose, because I figured, well, they're going to probably press Benjamin and Gable a little bit now that they've cycled them down, but no. So that one kind of threw me. All we have really left to talk about, folks, in a very weird SmackDown, is Dolph Ziggler, who clearly was wrestling like the face, against Sami Zayn. But I'm going to tell you this. This was a really, 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 really good match. You hear me talk a lot about how you can only have so good a match on television. And that's 100% true. This is approaching the higher end of that. I mean, you're not going to get NXT from WWE, but this is approaching the higher end of what WWE is going to give you on TV. And there was a couple of really good, solid moves there and series that I really was impressed. I've always been impressed with both of these guys anyway. But I think they went the extra mile. I really do. Now, it's a shame that it's in an effort that makes no sense. It's a shame that it's with an illogical premise. Because these matches would have meant so much more if the premise was logical. But what are you going to do? We're dealing with the WWE, and they don't think logic is necessarily the key factor in anything. So we just have to accept that Shane McMahon, for no reason whatsoever, decided that it would be in the best interest of SmackDown to give Dolph Ziggler an opportunity to be in a title match when he's already thrown away one title. We also have to accept that Shane McMahon thought it would be in the best interest of SmackDown to give give Baron Corbin, who's won nothing in a long, long time, an opportunity to go for a title when he's had his opportunities and failed time and time and time and time again. Makes no sense. So these matches, while they were good technically, it hurt them that the premise was so screwed up and that you couldn't buy into it and say, oh man, I hope Ziggler wins because, you know, he deserves it. Well, you know, you're going in there saying, well, he doesn't really deserve it. Or, man, I hope Baron Corbin wins because, you know, he's never really had a shot and he's been tearing through people. No, just the opposite. He's had 100 shots and he's tore through nobody. What I was hoping they would do, and they didn't, was if you were going to turn one of the two of them, and I don't think they've turned either one of them, but if they decided to, it would have been Corbin. And I think it would have made a really strong statement if both of them guys beat the hell out of Baron Corbin. Corbin, as you've seen, come out again to try to defend himself and couldn't. I think it would have made a really strong statement if Corbin kind of just snapped and took out Zayn and KO like backstage or something afterwards. And I think fans would have said, man, we got a pretty powerful face now. You know, and there would have been some motivation there, but the motivation of just, well, I wanted to be in the match and you tried to stop me, doesn't make him a face. There's no moral high ground there. It's just greed. I want to be in the title match. Same thing with Ziggler. So that doesn't adequately turn any open face if that's what they intended to begin with, which I don't think it was. But a great match, Mike. I mean, I thought these two guys put on a pretty much the higher end of the scale you're going to see on a TV match.
Yeah, and that's the deal. I mean, we saw this past week, they had some pretty good matches on all their shows, including NXT and 205 Live. I mean, that Pete Dunne Mark Andrews match, ooh, I tell you what. But I mean, especially the way they got to the ending of the Sami Zayn Dolph Ziggler match. I mean, that was a logical ending to a very well put on illogical gimmick match, you know. I mean, but it was a logical ending. Having him run basically into the super kick as he's trying to do the Haluva kick, you know, that was a logical. Yep. That was a logical ending.
It was, and look, again, these guys can only do so much on TV, and they can't help what gimmick they're thrown in as far as the storyline, but I thought they made the best out of it, Todd.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there about that with Zayn and these guys.
That would be Ziggler. Zayn and Ziggler. Yeah, they put on a good match. Look, SmackDown was very, very odd this week. There's no question about it. But my overall impression is it was almost like two different shows. Because, again, if we break this down and you say there's going to be no Nakamura, there's going to be no AJ Styles, there's going to be no Rusev or Aiden English type thing, the Usos aren't going to wrestle, Bobby Roode isn't going to wrestle, Randy Orton isn't going to wrestle, Jinder Mahal isn't going to wrestle, you're going to say, well, what the hell, man? What kind of show are you going to have? That's all your top guys, for the most part. And that's how I felt. And then if you throw into the mix the one match they were going to have, which was totally illogical, Baron Corbin versus Dolph Ziggler for a chance to be added to the title match at Fastlane, and you stretch that into two, it's almost like, oh, God, what are you doing to me? But somehow, couldn't help but enjoy this show. I really couldn't. I guess what I liked about it was it made you focus on some other people instead of the top guys for a change. I got to see Sarah Logan in a long match. Had no idea she was that good. I got to see Baron Corbin in a slightly longer match that I now maintain a little hope that perhaps he's moving forward. I got to see a rejuvenated Dolph Ziggler and Sami Zayn at his best do a really, really, really good job. And I got to see the New Day and Gable and Benjamin put on a very decent, solid match. I also got to see Jinder Mahal cut a very good promo. Rude staying right with him there. Randy Orton kind of caught in the middle. I guess we're probably going to see a three-way for that U.S. championship. That's what I would assume. And as much as it would be very easy for me to say, and I know a lot of people have wrote to me and said this was the worst SmackDown ever, I can't, from my perspective, and everybody's entitled to their own opinion, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it despite all the shortcomings. You know, I used to tell a story that I went to a Monday Night Raw in a blizzard. And I mean a blizzard. It was so bad that 90% of the roads were impassable. And my ass still went because I had a ticket and I had a front row ticket and I was going to Monday Night Raw. And half the wrestlers didn't make it. They came out in the beginning of the show and said, due to this horrible weather, a good number of these wrestlers just didn't make it. We've done the best we can to put on whatever card we're going to. And by the way, they told everyone in the audience that did come, since you guys came, you're getting that same ticket for next time we come here free on us, which was very nice of them. And they had to put on matches with mostly undercard guys because that's all they had there. And somehow, despite the fact that I was so disappointed I wasn't going to see 75% of the people I paid to see, it was fun. Because the guys that finally got their opportunity said, this is my chance, and they really put on great matches. And I kind of felt that's the way it was with SmackDown this week. There's a lot of people I wish I had seen. But when it was over, I said, in a way, I'm kind of glad they didn't take up that time, because the people I did see got a chance to flesh things out a little bit farther. Got a chance to show what they can do. And suddenly I'm kind of interested in seeing Randy Orton and Bobby Roode. I'm kind of interested in where Dolph Ziggler's going now that he's rejuvenated his career a little bit. I'm kind of interested in this Sarah Logan thing and if she continues to excel in the women's division. And I'm happy about that. So I can't hate it. I can't hate it. It's easy to hate it and say, oh, man, they didn't try. And it was built on a ridiculous premise. But I do think the matches were good enough that it sustained it. So before we get to our ratings, one important thing I want to address, because I know that some of our regulars in the chat room, as well as some people who wrote me, said, I'm confused because you got mad at Kurt Angle for polling the audience with the Seth Rollins thing on Monday Night Raw, because you've always said, look, I mean, you know, I'm the voice of the fans and the WWE should listen to the fans, listen to the fans. And then when they're listening to the fans, you yell at them. No, it's apples and oranges. You listen to the fans when you really listen to the fans. That means when the fans pop for Rusev, the powers that be should say, look, the fans really want to cheer for Rusev. Let's give Rusev some meaty things to do. Let's listen to the fans and see if maybe Rusev is bigger than we think. Maybe we're not seeing what they see. If the fans want to like him, let's give them reason to like him. Let's give them reason to buy a t-shirt. Let's give them reason to come to the arena with Rusev signs. Let's not undermine it by making them lose and look foolish. That's what I mean by listening to the fans. If anyone thinks that if those fans erupted into "We hate Seth" chants, that Seth Rollins still wouldn't have been added to that match, you're crazy. They weren't listening to the fans. They were using the fans. They knew what the reaction would be, so they knew they were safe to say, "Gee, what do you fans think?" They weren't listening to the fans. That's not listening to the fans. That's using the fans as a tool. You know. "Gee, fans, do you want to see Nakamura in this match, or do you want to see Zack Ryder?" "Oh, you want to see Nakamura? Okay, we listen to the fans." Come on. That's not listening to the fans. So don't confuse the two. Poll the fans when it comes to title shots or things like that. You don't poll the fans. It's not a popularity contest. WWE is supposed to be a contest of you know, merit, not popularity contest. So even if it was legitimate, even if you put out, you know, I don't want them trudging out Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, and Elias and holding a thing over their head and saying, "Who should wrestle for a championship tonight? Applause for Seth, applause for Finn, applause for Elias." You can't do it that way. That's not listening to the fans. Listening to the fans is hearing what those fans are cheering or yelling for when a certain wrestler is in the ring and saying, "Look, this guy that we thought was going to be hot, he's not hot." And forcing him down the fans' throats are not going to work. Let's just cycle him down. They like this guy. Let's see if we can make him like him even more. That's what I mean by listening to the fans. So me being the voice of the fans, I don't want the fans used. And that's what Kurt Angle did. And that's what, not Kurt Angle, because he was told to do it. That's what the WWE did. They said, "Oh, the fans think we don't listen to them. So we'll have Kurt Angle go out there and say, do you think Seth Rollins should be added to this match?" Knowing full well the fans are going to say yes. What are they going to say? No. Does anybody think they're going to say no? You might as well go out there and say, "How many of you fans want free food at the snack bar?" "Oh, we're listening to the fans. They want free food." That's not listening to the fans, folks. Listening to the fans would be, this Rusev Day is on fire. Let's give Rusev a big upset win over somebody. You know where they're listening to the fans a little bit? I'll give you a great example of listening to the fans. How long has Elias been in this roster? WWE's main roster? Not that long. He's in the Elimination Chamber. And he was in there ahead of Seth Rollins and Finn Balor. That's because of the reaction that the fans have been giving Elias, and people have been paying attention and saying, I guess that's who they want to see in big matches. So we'll give them that. That's listening to the fans. Having one more Matt Hardy versus Bray Wyatt match, that's not listening to the fans. Because very clearly no one wants to see it. So that's the difference, folks. There you have it. Mike, what do you think?
You're right. I mean, listening to the fans, in my opinion, would be what happened when Rusev and Lana came out there in that Mixed Match Challenge. They got a huge pop. Okay? Listening to the fans, okay, they're getting a huge pop. Let's put them back together permanently. That's listening to the fans, and that's something that should happen. And we've said that that's something that should happen, but they don't want to seem to look at it. And that's listening to the fans. And look, again, they're patronized with some of this other stuff that they call listening to the fans. That's called patronizing your customers, you know. That's what that's called.
It is, yeah. That's exactly right. It's patronizing. It's almost, let me tell you another story. And this almost put me off of wrestling forever. When Monday Night Raw first came to my area, I remember before the show started, they would have an announcer come out and say, "We're testing the sound system. So if you fans could just bear with us, and for 1 minute, could you yell and scream as loud as you possibly can so we can peak the levels? Right now, one, two, three, go, and everybody would be, yeah! Then, and this is when I got suspicious, then they'd say, okay, thank you. Listen, could you do the opposite? Could you boo really loud, and we'll see about those levels? And I'm like, the level would be the same. I'm a musician. You've checked the level. The boo is not going to be any different than the yay. And guess what would happen, folks? When someone got no reaction, they would pipe that son of a bitch in. And it would make it look like, oh, look at the reaction this guy's getting on TV. They would pipe in those boos. They would pipe in those cheers. And I remember saying, because I would tape the show, obviously, because I was going to it live, so I would tape it. I remember saying, this guy got nowhere near this reaction. Where the hell? They've taped this, and they've used it. And that's ridiculous. That's using the fans. That's lying. What Kurt Angle did Monday night, that's using the fans. And that's not listening to the fans.
Keep doing.
So I think, in all honesty, Mike, you're right. And I think your explanation is exactly correct of Lana and Rusev. That's what the fans want. The fans want a Lana Rusev reunion where she becomes part of this Rusev Day thing. And they would pop big for it, as they did. So now if the WWE really wants to listen to the fans, the powers that be have to say, did you hear the pop they got? Maybe we're wrong. Maybe they don't want to see Lana with Tamina Snuka or, you know, the women's division so much as they do just want to see her with Rusev. So maybe we could do both. Maybe she could wrestle, but she's comes out with Rusev too. Let's test it. The fans seem to like it. So let's test it. Now let's see if they do it. Because if they do, then they've listened to the fans. If they didn't, then they're just pretending to listen to the fans. And my job, if I really want to be the voice of the fans, is to let the fans know when you're being used as opposed to when you're actually being listened to. And Monday night, you weren't actually being listened to. Seth Rollins was in that match. And it wouldn't have mattered if they had to cut the sound out of everybody chanting, Seth sucks, Seth sucks. They would have done that if that's what the fans chanted. So that was definitely not listening to the fans. Anyway, this is a very, very hard SmackDown for me to rate. Because I'm not going to lie to you, I expected to hate every moment of this SmackDown. And when I come into it with that attitude, it's very hard to change my mind. And it did. From the very first match with Sarah Logan stomping a mud hole in Charlotte, who did a wonderful job. Listen, you could give Charlotte all the credit in the world. Charlotte Flair, a great athlete, and certainly one of the top women in both divisions. And she sold, and I would even say maybe oversold, Sarah Logan to the point where there were times in that match that I said, is she going to win? Are they going to let her win? Because she's kicking the hell out of Charlotte. And I said to myself, Charlotte helped make that. She really did. But Sarah Logan has got a very different style. It's just a smash mouth. She perfectly plays that character of a sort of a redneck fighter who's not doing ballet. She's just in there to put her fist in your face. And I absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. She's not the best technical wrestler on that roster. Doesn't have to be. Her style is like a breath of fresh air in the women's division. And I was very, very impressed with that match. And then the rest of the night kind of just went well match-wise. Every match I thought, this is going to suck. Who wants to see Baron Corbin against Kevin Owens? I was like, yeah, it really wasn't that bad. And then I'm like, oh, God, here comes Big E. He's going to do a pancake-eating contest, for God's sake. Do we need this? And then out come Gable and Benjamin to cut a pretty damn good promo and then follow it up with a good match. And then Bobby Roode comes out and I'm like, oh God, I'm not buying Bobby Roode. And I certainly don't like Randy Orton. And then for some weird reason, I see Randy Orton walking down that aisle and he's standing in that ring with Bobby Roode. And I'm like, I'd like to see this. Probably because I've never seen it before. This is a fresh match. Bobby Roode, Randy Orton, two guys who've been in the business forever. And I'm thinking to myself, this could be a really good match, actually. These two guys could actually pull one off. And then Jinder Mahal comes and interrupts it, and I expect it to be the typical dumb promo, but instead he's actually pretty clever about it. And I'm liking it. So it's a tale of two different SmackDowns. From the perspective of a storyline and a basis for having a show, this is an F. It made no sense. The entire show is built around two guys trying to get a title shot who do not deserve a title shot. And the champion's not even there to say, what the hell? How many people, what do you want me to defend it against? Why don't we have an elimination chamber? Apparently that's what this is going to be. So that part of it I hated. That part of it, I think the fans are dead solid right that the premise and the storylines involved in this SmackDown was horrible. But the wrestlers rose to the occasion. Best promo I've heard Bobby Roode do in ages. Best promo I've heard Jinder Mahal do in ages. Sarah Logan tore the place up. Dolph Ziggler looks like, you know, he turned back the hands of time 5 years, which is exactly what a $1.5 million contract will do for you. Sami Zayn excelled in that match. There was a couple parts in that match where I was really, like, almost on my feet. Never thought they'd pull off a match like that on TV. And I'm saying to myself, the matches are fine. Maybe because these guys got a chance to taste the spotlight a little more. Here, you got an extra 4 or 5 minutes. Here, you got an extra 3 or 4 minutes. Because we don't have Nakamura. We don't have AJ Styles tonight. We don't have Rusev tonight. We don't have a lot of things going on tonight. So you guys get an extra 3 or 4 minutes. That's why the NXT pay-per-views are so good, by the way. Because there's only 4 or 5 matches. But they're all long, and they're all really good. WWE usually has chopped up 5 and 6 minute matches, and let's get backstage to do a promo, and then let's get to the ring again, and then let's do another promo, and hurry up and get out there and do your 6 minutes. This week's SmackDown, they gave them a lot more time, and it felt a lot more like a real wrestling event to me. So in that respect, I would give it an A. So now I have an A and an F to deal with. So I have to meet it in the middle. So I guess I'll have to give SmackDown a C. But I'm going to tell you, I give the wrestling, the matches themselves, I'm giving an A. Not one of those matches bored me. Far from it, at least two of them really impressed me. But again, the premise was horrible, illogical, and it kind of made me think that they think the fans are stupid. That they would even fall for it. So, Mike, it's a very hard thing to rate. I guess I got to give it a C.
I give it a little bit better. I give it a C plus. And look, Sarah Logan reminds me a little bit of what's her name in a younger version of. I'm blanking on her name now, but you know, girl in TNA that would drink, that brought in the flask and drink out of the flask and all that type of stuff.
You don't mean ODB. Do you mean ODB?
ODB, yes.
Mike, I got to tell you, let me stop you for a second because that is a brilliant analogy. That is absolutely correct. I said the same thing. She's definitely a younger and probably a more attractive version of ODB, but she has that barroom country, backwoods, Beverly Hillbillies, I'm wrestling with the boys type feel to her. And I'm telling you, putting her in there with Charlotte, who is a technician, it was just great to watch it because I'm like, this is a clash of two styles. It's not the same styles going head to head. And that's too much of what we see in the WWE. This girl style and this girl style, exactly the same. They interchange their moves. Nothing changes. The psychology isn't changed. Nothing's changed. That's what's wrong with wrestling, even in the men's division, like in 205 Live. Remember back when, like, a Stone Cold Steve Austin would fight Shawn Michaels, and you're like, well, this is totally clash of styles. You've got a barroom brawler just coming in there to punch you in the face versus a guy who's going to try to finesse you to death and high fly you and whatever. Or you've got this guy with this mentality of, you know, I'm the best, like Shawn Michaels, against a guy like The Undertaker, who just couldn't care less about anything, and he's impervious to 90% of your offense. There was always a clash of styles. And the WWE recently, it's like the same styles clashing. We all got kind of the same gimmick. We all want to be the champion. We all think we're great. And we all have this style. It's great to see when styles clash a little bit and you say, here's Charlotte the Technician, here's Sarah Logan the Smash Mouth, and here they go. It made for a very entertaining match. Now, I know Ruby Riott's good too, so I'm looking forward to that match too, but I'm going to tell you this, and I think it's next week on SmackDown. I'm going to tell you this. Ruby Riott has a hill to climb, because I think Sarah Logan did a magnificent job. She went from, I don't even know who the hell she is on Tuesday night, to probably my second favorite female wrestler on both rosters in one match. That's saying a lot, Mike.
That is saying a lot. I mean, and look, I referenced this match earlier, but the Pete Dunne Mark Andrews match on 205 Live this past week, it fits into that same type of thing that the Sarah Logan Charlotte Flair match does.
Yes, it does.
I mean, and that's what made it such an interesting match. And look, Ruby Riott, I've seen Ruby Riott in NXT. She can do that,
yep,
type of devil may care, smash mouth type of thing, you know, if they allow her to do it. That's the problem. I mean, over and over again, what have we said about the WWE? They don't, at least on the main roster, they don't allow these guys and gals to do what they can do. They just don't allow it.
And that's why I think I forgive SmackDown a little bit for not having some of the big stars here, because if Sarah Logan had to go in there and lose to Charlotte Flair in 4 minutes, I would not have the same feeling about Sarah Logan as I'm having now. She needed that 10, 12 minutes to prove herself. And when they gave her the 10 or 12 minutes, look what happened. That never would have happened if the show was jam-packed with, we got to get backstage for a Rusev skit. We got to let Bobby Roode have 15 minutes to wrestle. We got to let AJ come out. Nakamura's got to come out. We got a lot of things happening here. That never would have happened. So I'm very thankful, at least, for that aspect of SmackDown. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I got to give it a C as well.
Okay, so we're all over on C's. I know in the chat room, Derek does not like the SmackDown. And I understand why. Trust me, I understand why. But if you remove the lack of star power and the illogical nature of the match, and you just focus on, did those matches help those people, and did storylines develop that I'm interested in from these matches, you might look at it differently, because I think it helped make Sarah Logan. I think it helped me forgive the fact that I think Bobby Roode is boring. I think it helped me forgive the fact that I had washed my hands of Jinder Mahal. It helped me forgive the fact that I don't like Randy Orton much. So I think it helped. It helped to rehab. Maybe they needed a show like that where they just featured some guys who needed some time. We'll see what happens. Anyway, folks, we'll be here on Sunday with more Wrestle Chat Radio. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.